to be serving Hashem based on the understanding that we're simply incapable of beginning to repay all of His kindliness to us, everything that He's doing for us. But many of us don't necessarily see it quite that way. There's a lot of things wanting in my life. It's not exactly like my life is the ideal situation. And therefore, maybe the Chavis HaLomis wasn't talking about me. Maybe he meant the guy down the block who really has it good. So, therefore we have to understand that the truth is that we have a lot of work ahead of us in starting to work backwards and start discovering all the good that Hashem is busy doing for us, just that we are oblivious to it. Very much like the teenage child. You see so often, like a teenage child is just full of gripes against his parents and is completely oblivious to everything the parent is doing for them. I remember a teenage kid I was involved with was full of gripes against his father. And his father was working with him in a very patient way. And he used to take him out to eat once a week and listen to his gripes. So it was just a very funny scene to see a kid sitting over a big fat pastrami sandwich and digging in and really enjoying the food and busy telling his father about all the things he did wrong to him. So, for some reason, and we're going to analyze some of those reasons now, yes, all the good that the parent does simply goes unnoticed. And the truth is that our position with Hashem is very much the same thing. There is so much going on in our lives that simply goes unnoticed for many of the same reasons. And here we have to figure out, in order to be able to start appreciating everything we have in our lives, which will also enable us to enjoy it more, we have to identify what are the obstacles that are preventing us from noticing them. If we are asserting now that yes, our lives are full of luxuries that we're simply oblivious to, we have to figure, and it's our job to go about unearthing them, we have to spend a little time on what are the obstacles. If we figure out what are the obstacles, we'll suddenly be able to clear away so much of the dirt covering it and start to discover what our lives are for. The Chavis HaLomis presents three primary obstacles to noting the good, the kindliness that envelops us. So first of all, human nature is to be focused on what they don't have. We've discussed this recently, but I want to approach this from an interesting angle. I'm going to talk in terms of chinuch, because in a big way our relationships with our children and many of the principles of chinuch very much apply in our relationships with Hashem as well. So my Rebbe laid down a very interesting principle in chinuch. He told the story of two brothers who got together to take their children on a camping trip. It was the older brother and the younger brother. Now, the younger brother, coming with all of his children, very much admired his older brother, and he was coming with his children, he was intent on giving them a good time. And the two families got together to do that. So, basically he decided for the next 3 days, I am just going to indulge my kids, really let them have as good a time as possible. I don't have all that much time with them throughout the year. Now we're going to go all the way. So, basically, he kept on promising his kids, oh, this trip, he built up the anticipation, this trip is going to be better than anything you've ever experienced. And he really spent a lot of time planning the trip, planning the details of the trip, and he decided his mindset is going to be whatever the kids ask for these 3 days, they're going to get. And basically that's what went on. You know, they went from one place to the next, up north, wherever it is they went. The kids wanted to go to pizza for lunch, they got pizza for lunch. After pizza they wanted an ice cream and onion rings, they got ice cream and onion rings. Whatever it is, it was yes, and he was coming up with more ideas, let's do this also, and let's do this also. Okay, this is what was going on for the 3 days. Now, he noticed that his older brother was taking a little bit of a different approach with the kids. Now, I knew that his older brother, wasn't like he was tighter financially than he was. And they had also discussed that they want to utilize these 3 days to give their kids the time of their lives. But yet he saw that with his older brother, the approach was different. First of all, he wasn't as open-handed. Some things came, some things didn't. When the kids requested things, it was never an immediate yes. He always agonized over it a little bit. Okay, we'll do that. And some things yeah, and some things not. Now the younger brother was a little bit frustrated because they had, first of all, it was a little bit incongruous, two approaches with the two families. He's busy pouring his, you know, giving his kids everything, and the older one is giving his kids a rough time. So he was getting a little bit annoyed throughout the trip, until finally at the end of the trip, he took it up with his older brother. He said, you know, we were talking about how we're really going to put our all into this trip. How come you're being so, having such a hard time opening your hand? How come everything is such a shiloh? How come even the things we did discuss that we'll do, you are hemming and hawing when it actually comes down to it? So, the older brother responded, he said, you know what? Let's see something at the end of the trip. Let's make an experiment. You take your kid, I'll take my kids, separately, where they don't hear each other. You ask your kids how the trip was. I'll ask my kids how the trip was. Okay. So the younger brother asked his kids how the trip was. And they said, alright, wasn't bad. And that was a big letdown for him. It kind of took the air out of it because he had really put his all into giving them the best time he could give them. Now, more than that, it was actually this younger brother who was consulting. Said that he had felt throughout the trip that he just isn't doing enough, that he can't pack it on enough. He was really anticipating, you know, making up the whole year of not having enough time for his kids, and he just wasn't, he didn't feel that he was really getting there where his kids are just really drinking it in and enjoying. The whole time it was like, not quite enough, and not quite enough, and he came away from the trip with the feeling that it wasn't quite enough. Now when the older brother asked his kids, they said they had a great time. Unequivocally, very clearly and enthusiastically. They had a great time. What's the pshat? So the answer is, and this is an important principle in chinuch in general, the more a person feels that something he's getting is inevitable, it has to happen, there's no two ways about it, the less he enjoys it. The less secure a person feels with something, I shouldn't use the word secure, but the less of a given it is, the less clear it is that he actually is going to have it, when he actually does have it, he enjoys it more. There's a few elements to this, about what's behind this. But that's why, just in general, if we're going to take away a practical chinuch implication, it's good. You're giving your children things to avoid a couple of mistakes. First of all, don't let things come routine. I'm not talking about breakfast, lunch, and supper. I'm talking about things that you want the kids to feel that you're doing something special for them. Don't let them become routine. When it comes to Shabbos party, don't let any standards be established. Don't get the same thing every week. Get different things, and every couple of weeks, take down the standards a bit. Have the standards go up, down, this, that. Your kids will appreciate the Shabbos party a lot more. That's number one. Anything that becomes routine will become forgotten. It'll be integrated into what they take for granted. And now, you're only a good guy if you give more. Right? Once, for 4 weeks, you've given a really good Shabbos party, they don't appreciate the Shabbos party anymore. The Shabbos party is already something automatic. It's expected, and on the contrary, now if you take it away, if you ever do downplay it, you are depriving them of something, which is what you hear in today's youth so much. How many kids today suffer from their parents' abuse of not giving them this and emotionally draining them of that. Not enough sleepover parties, not enough this, not enough that. That very often comes from the fact that the parents are working too hard to try to please the children with what they are giving them. Obviously we can't make general rules here, but in a general way, at least from the theoretical level. So therefore that's number one. You are not a good guy in your kids' eyes by providing them with things that they expect to get. That's number one. And number two is, okay, here we'll already move the discussion to how this applies to us. And as I'm saying this, people can be thinking of their kids and saying, oh yes, I see clearly how this works. But now let's move this to see how this applies to us. And yes, the answer is that all the things that we take for granted, all the things that are givens, or that we consider givens, we consider a given to such an extent that we never even bother to think about it, we do not consider benefits. What do we consider a benefit? A benefit would be winning $1 million in the lottery. Why? Because I never got that before. To get something that I've gotten a few times in life isn't bad, but it's not who knows what. To get something that I've always been getting in life is nothing at all. To ask people to sum up what are the special gifts that they have in life, people, you might hear people will generally cite things if they can think of anything. Many people can't think of anything. It's funny. You can ask mamish fortunate people, nothing so special about my life. But when people can think of things, they'll usually cite things that they've come across in the recent past, relatively. Whether it's a person that came into money in the last 5 years, or even in the last 10 or 20 years, still conscious in his mind the contrast between not having had it and then getting it. So people will cite these different things in their lives that they noted the contrast. They didn't have it and then they got it. It's rare, unless a person has been learning this subject. A person has been exposed to Chavis Salvavis and the others starting to deal with it. It's rare that if you ask a person, can you tell me, count a list of 10 blessings that he would include body parts. Why? Because body parts is something that you had all along. You never experienced being without it. It's a given, and therefore it's nothing. It's nothing at all. That is not something to list on my benefits. Now why it works this way also is worth analyzing, because it will also help us work against these tendencies and start discovering. And start, yes, discovering the blessings that surround us. So, first of all, it's the simple element of, yes, people don't notice what they're used to. People don't notice what they're used to, they don't notice what they consider to be givens. Chavis Havavis has a famous mashal about this. If you have a man, a generous man, who found a baby in the street, found an abandoned baby in the street, brought him into his house, and showered him with everything, pampered him, raised him in the lap of luxury, gave him everything he needed, and finally, we'll talk in the larger world, modern day terms, set him up with education, etc., set him up with a profession, got him started in a career. This kid obviously owes everything he has to this man. Okay. Then another thing happened. This fellow, this philanthropist, heard about some person who was so deeply in debt that he was actually arrested. I don't know if it works this way in the States, but this is how it works. It does work that way here in Eretz Yisrael. The person is unable to pay his debts for too long and they'll actually take him to jail. So there's a person who has been chased by creditors for the last 10 years, living in terrible stress, can't put it together, his life is one big mess, and then on top of it all he goes to jail. And this philanthropist hears of this man, and he decides, I want to take on this case. He goes, pays up all the guy's debts, gets him out of jail, sets him up with an apartment, sets him up with a job, gets him back on his feet. Not in a luxurious way, sets him up with a basic apartment, and with a basic job, he can make ends meet at the end of the month. Who's going to be more grateful to the philanthropist? The answer is, if you think about it for a minute, it's going to be the second guy. The kid is like any other kid. He grew up with it. Since he grew up with it, he expects it naturally. And therefore, there's nothing special about getting any of it. You'll ask the kid, you know you were taking it off the street. Yeah, he took me in off the street, so of course he should give me these things. What, he's going to take me in and then let me fend for myself? Like a kid who wasn't taken off the street. Like a kid who was actually born. It's not less of a taiva if your parents actually created you than if they pulled you in off the street. Whereas this other fellow experienced life without all of these things, and therefore he gets only a little bit of it, and he is extremely appreciative. So that's number one. It's very hard to remain conscious of things that are a regular part of our life. But there's an added element to this also. There's an added element to this also, and that is that, what we mentioned before, people, by nature, are constantly striving for the next level. Whatever I have, my focus is on what I don't yet have. And this prevents me from enjoying what I do have. This is human nature. We've been discussing this in other shiur, but this, just going to put this across again. This is human nature. Human nature, man is ingrained with ambition, which naturally manifests on the material level. People are looking for more good times. People are looking for more pleasure. Unlike animals who are satisfied once they have their food, people always want more and more and more. Now the truth is, the root of this smida is meant to be used for kedusha, spirituality. A person should never be satiated. Fine. But generally the way it manifests is that whatever a person has, he's on to the next level. We've all seen this. Person is dreaming for years about getting the latest car. He's setting aside money for it. And then when he finally does, he enjoys it for 2 weeks. And then it could have been the same jalopy he had for the last 10 years. Stops noticing it. Why? He's already on to the next thing. Person gets his dream home, enjoys it a little bit. After a month or two, stops noticing it. And his mind is full with, okay, what's next on the agenda? What can I get next? This is the way human nature works. And since we're so focused on what the next step is, this prevents us from seeing what we do have. And that's why, yes, we're oblivious to tons of things that we're with, to the extent, the Chavis Olamah says, that people actually commit the sacrilege of putting down the blessings that they have. What do I mean by that? You hear people complaining about the wreck of a car, or about the dump that they live in. There are people who don't have a roof over their heads. There are people who would love to own a home. But I'm complaining about the dump that I live in because I'd like a bigger home. And therefore, not only am I not noticing the good that Hashem is giving me, I'm actually complaining about the good that Hashem is giving me. This is a sacrilege. Avigdor Miller was one time, one of his grandchildren once came into his house and saw him holding his head under a sink full of water. He's holding his head under the water. The grandchild didn't know what was going on, but after about a minute he picked up his head and he took a deep breath. So his grandson asked him, what were you doing? So he said, today I was outside in the street and I heard somebody make a comment about New York air. Somebody said how bad New York air is. So now, Avigdor Miller, anybody who knew about Avigdor Miller knew how much work, what a life's career he put into developing appreciation for the simplest aspects of life. And one of those things was air. Air. He could go on and on about what a breath of air was. Things that, even if people do list their body parts as blessings, who's going to list the breath of air as a blessing? So he said, I heard that comment and I felt like it was going to ruin so much inspiration that I had look, I'm building up the soul more. You won't comment like that. Ah, New York air is polluted. And so I decided I have to take a drastic measure to continue appreciating New York air. I stuck my head under the water for 2 minutes. Then when I picked up my head, I said, ah, New York air is indeed a very big blessing. I used to tell people, I remember he used to suddenly stop people on the show and he would say, cocktails, cocktails. Meaning, every time you take a breath of air, you have to realize air is a cocktail. What's air? Air is everywhere. No, air is not everywhere. Most of the universe does not have air that you can live with. There's a small layer of air around Earth, which, if you think of it in those terms, if you think in terms of the galaxies, you think in terms of the Milky Way, air is a very, very precious commodity. There isn't an awful lot of it. But Hashem in His goodness provided us with a pocket of air, a small layer of air that surrounds the earth, and we have as much of it as we want. But if you're thinking in terms of outer space, you have to realize that this is a big luxury. You have as much as you want whenever you want it. Here and there, when you take a breath of air, a person should think about this. And the truth is that if we actually study biologically what a breath of air is, because I'll say that for each breath of air that you take, a person should really say halal. This already gives us a little bit of an idea with what the Chavis HaVavis means when he says that we aren't capable of repaying the smallest of Hashem's kindliness. And again, often to many of us it sounds like exaggerated. How much good is there already in my life? When you take into account, when you really study, open up one of these books on human anatomy, and you study what a breath of air is, and how complex it is, and what's involved. And not only that, but you don't have to be on top of making sure that it all works right. When you take a breath of fresh air, you're pulling in a whole new supply of oxygen that you need to keep your body going. And a lot of oxygen is needed for that. It's oxygen that has to be absorbed over the surface of a tennis court in volume. You have to do that in every breath. Do you have a tennis court in your body? Where do you absorb all that oxygen? And the answer is that you do. You have a tennis court inside your body. You have that amount of space, that amount of surface that absorbs the oxygen that you're bringing in with the air. How? Hashem made a genius contraption called the lung. Inside the lung, there are very many, I believe it's called bronchioles, which is basically, okay, I said that in order to feel important, but what it is in my terms is a lot of branches that branch off into smaller branches and branch off into smaller branches. There's so much of it that altogether the surface is equivalent to that of a tennis court. Each time you take a breath, all that oxygen is absorbed on that surface, and then from there it's conveyed to the heart, and then the heart is busy pumping it off to all parts of the body. Okay, that's in a nutshell, obviously. It can be expounded on a much more length. But whatever it is, each breath is a whole process that takes a lot in order for it to work well. And therefore, Chazal are not so off by saying that yes, for each breath that a person takes, he should really say halal. You appreciate the complexity of what went on when you took a breath, you should really be saying halal. You really should be saying halal. Imagine if, let's go back to that mashal. Imagine if someone was holding your head underwater. And he'd say, you know what, I'm willing to take it out every 2 minutes, but if you do say halal for each time, you'll be willing to live 10 years like that. I'll say halal each time, just let me get that breath of fresh air once every 2 minutes. And you're getting as much as you want. So you understand that we're living our whole lives in deficit. Because saying halal involves a whole bunch of breaths. And each of those breaths requires a halal. How many breaths does it take to say halal? I don't know, a whole bunch. Right? But you realize that with each breath, you're accumulating more and more and more of a deficit. It's not at all exaggerated when the Chavis HaVavis says, you just be busy with your breaths for 100 times as long as you live. It's not at all exaggerated when the Chavis HaVavis says that you are so enveloped by Hashem's kindliness that you don't have a chance of beginning to repay. but let's start noticing it. So therefore, don't just run around breathing by rote. But you take a breath of fresh air every once in a while. You can't do this all the time. If you'll always be busy focusing on the air that you're breathing, you won't be able to accomplish anything else. And Hashem wants you to accomplish other things too. But this is one of the accomplishments also. Sometimes, to take a breath of fresh air and say, oh, it's a good thing I can do this. Not everybody is capable of taking those breaths either. Some people live surrounded in air, but they need machines to help them do it. They can't take those breaths. You have a system that works by itself. But whatever the case is, this is really just one example. Air. But really the point is to be able to back up and try to unearth one thing after the other. How many things are there in my life that I simply never noticed? Just because I've grown up with them and therefore I never focused on them. How much money would a person give if his arm was in danger of being amputated? How much money would he give to save his arm? What if he knew that there was some surgery somewhere out there that cost $700,000? He'd do everything he could to come up with the money. He'd mortgage his home. And you have that for free. Think about that a little bit. Think of what life without an arm is, would be like. There are people who live that way. Think a little bit about what it would be like. But again, we're so used to using our arms. I always find it amazing to watch with babies. Oh Hashem, we have six. I watched the process six times. And when a baby suddenly starts discovering that he can do something with those two appendages on each side of him. Those are just two things. And then he starts figuring out that there are things he can do. First he can knock at things. And then he starts learning how to use his fingers. Watching the process. And it's amazing to watch it. The kid is suddenly starting to discover these things are not just there for nothing. But it's always a little frustrating when I'm watching the process and I'm thinking, kid, note it, right? Be conscious of it in the way you remember when you're 10 years old. Alright, the one thing that I could do is instead of trying to get my 5-month-old baby to do that, is to say, hey mister, you're 35 years old, can you work backwards? And suddenly start noticing that yes, those two things dangling on both of your sides actually serve you very, very well. There's a lot there. So the truth is that this is a worthwhile activity. The Chavos HaLevavot says, step back and give your body parts turns. You can do an awful lot of this without actually going into biological study. You actually do read a biology book on the body, you can appreciate it to a much deeper level. But even without that, if you make yourself a bit of a schedule, make a list of body parts. The Chavos HaLevavot presents a very, very detailed list. And in your daily routine, when you're out walking in the morning, or whatever it is, each time decide, I'm going to focus on on some other body part. Think one time about the knee. About the knee. Try to walk without bending your knee. Now the knee is certainly not one of the most vital parts of the body. And you can do relatively okay without it. And I don't know if you would spend $700,000 to save the use of your knee. I don't know. But when you are walking comfortably and just bending it freely, which makes for a much more comfortable stride, note that a little bit. Note what a convenient thing it is. Now the chokmah here is again to overcome the thought that, well, I'm human. That's what humans are. What? So here we have to step back and note another thing. And this is hard to live with, this consciousness. You did not, and this is what we were mentioning before, same what we said about kids, they'll enjoy it more if it's not inevitable. Learn to realize about all of your different body parts that you did not have to have them. You could have not had them. Any given body part that you'll be thinking about, except the vital organs, there are people who are without. Now you say, okay, yeah, but fine, but why should I have been, what are the chances that I would have been from one of the ones who did? We have to realize that really the approach is exactly the opposite. It's not like Alright, when something happens, when some freak accident occurs, someone ends up without. You have to realize that each of your different body parts was a conscious decision by Hashem to give you. It was a personal decision, and Hashem did not have to. It's not natural. It's natural that I should have a working wrist. It's natural that I should have 10 fingers. Why is it natural? Because Hashem did it for so many other people, so why shouldn't He do it for me? That's a very selfish way of thinking. Why shouldn't He do it for me? We're talking about gifts that, as we discussed before, if you add them all up, they're worth millions of dollars. You own all kinds of systems and machines that are your personal property, that are worth millions and millions of dollars. How much do people pay to have their heart malfunction a little less severely? Kidneys, lungs, all of these things are working well in your case. Millions of dollars. Each of these was given to you by Hashem by conscious decision when you were created, and that itself also, by the way. The fact that He created you is a taiva to note also, like Dr. Seuss says in his birthday book. You could have been an isn't. Right? So, he had the big picture of an isn't there. Right? When you say how much you have to enjoy your birthday. You could have been an isn't. You were familiar with Dr. Seuss' style? The big picture of an isn't and what you could have looked like. Okay. But you're not an isn't. Hashem decided He wanted to make a you. But even after He decided that, there were thousands of decisions, each of which were made on an individual basis. There's nothing automatic about Derech HaTeva. Those of us learning the six constant mitzvahs, we learned that recently. But there's nothing automatic about Derech HaTeva. People think that Derech HaTeva is like a Shabbos clock. Hashem set the world up to run in an automatic way, unless He intervenes and makes a change. No, nothing is automatic. Teva, but Victor Miller put it, is the word nature really is a meaningless word invented by the Greeks. There is no real meaning to the word nature. Because what is nature? Nature is simply Hashem's conscious activity. There's nothing that runs automatically. Which means that when you were conceived, at that time, you were about a 2/2 hundredth of an inch. That was your size when you first began. And at that time, in that split instant, when your DNA package was being sealed, thousands of decisions had to be made. And in that split instant, Hashem went through each of those thousands of decisions, one by one, relaxedly. Hashem wasn't rushed. A split second is plenty of time. Should this person have an elbow? And Hashem decided, I want this person to have an elbow. Think of it in those terms. In a very personal way. You were standing before Hashem, and Hashem had to decide piece by piece, should I give Him this? And Hashem decided, I'm going to give Him one functioning hand. And you know what? I'm going to give another functioning hand. You were the recipient of these conscious gifts from Hashem. And then Hashem said, and you know what even more I'm going to do for you? I'm going to give you kidneys that work by themselves. You're not have to be to have to go out looking for dialysis. These are very, very great gifts. If you'd actually be there in line, getting them one by one, having that feeling of seeing that in the line, Hashem says, tells some people no. And then you're standing there. And we're going through each thing, should you get it or not. Hashem doesn't have to give it to you at all. At this point in life, when, you know, I'm almost 40 years old and I'm saying, sure I should have 10 working fingers. Why should I have them? Because I always had them, so why shouldn't I have them? But go back to the beginning. Go back then and think, oh, I have two, not one, but two working eyes? With one eye, by the way, you can do pretty okay. Your field of vision would be a little funny. Hashem decided He's going to give you a perfect system. He gave you two of them. Okay, you might need glasses, but Hashem made the glasses available also. To realize that, 300 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case either. So one by one, go through your body parts and realize, focus on the personal element that Hashem did not have to give it to you. It did not have to be. And think a little bit about the alternative. I could have been without an arm and I'd still be a lucky person because I got a working respiratory system and digestive system. I would have still been a lucky person, but Hashem gave me the luxury of a second arm with the full 5 working fingers. Think about the alternative. Think about how you could have been without it. Realize that it didn't have to be, and then you'll enjoy it more. You'll enjoy it more, and you'll start appreciating the many things that Hashem did for you. So of course, we can go on and on and on and on with examples. And here we're only talking about the human body. But there are so many other things in your life also, besides the human body. You had parents who loved you. That's because Hashem channeled some of His love to you through them. Was it important in your upbringing that your parents loved you? Did it contribute to your growth? Realize that these are all gifts of Hashem. Hashem gave you those parents. Okay. This can go on and on. And it should go on and on. The Chavis Alonis says that a person should be coming up with new insights into himself every day. That's what they say, Shir Chadasha. Right? David talks about singing to Hashem. Shir Chadash. Shir Hashem, Shir Chadash. You should be singing a new song to Hashem. What does that mean? Doesn't necessarily, what if you're tone deaf? Singing to Hashem means expressing Hashem's praises. Expressing Hashem's praises means noting what there is to praise Hashem about. And Shir Shir Chadash, sing a new song. You should be deepening your appreciation every day by noting more and more and more elements of kindliness that Hashem is doing for you in your life. Now, okay, we really should elaborate on this, how a person actually starts living this. But before we do, we'll probably save that for next week already. But before we do, I want to briefly address one last big obstacle to noting Hashem's kindliness. Again, I just want to sum up. The first two that we noted were, I kind of spoke about them together, but I want to keep them distinct. First is the fact that we're always focused on what more do I want. Second is the fact that it's very hard to notice things he always had and he grew up with and you take as a given. Now there's a third, very fundamental obstacle that will have to be addressed more at length, and we'll probably save this for next week. And that is, why do people not sense that they live a life full of kindliness? Because there's misfortune in the world, and people are distracted by the problems. They become the main focus in their lives, and that prevents them from seeing how much good they have. You think my life is good. I have this problem, this problem, this problem, and that. 5 problems I have in my life right now. That fills a person's consciousness, prevents them from seeing all the good that he has in his life. Now even when a person has real problems, true problems, they are way outweighed by the benefits that a person has. Now theoretically you might question this, what happens if a person, but everybody in this room we could say it for sure, because anybody who's able to get here today is clearly in a condition that his benefits way outweigh any problems that he might have. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here now. There are a lot of people who can't make it here today, who are lying immobile in hospital beds, who still, their benefits outweigh their problems. But this is really the third obstacle. Our problems block our view. They prevent us from seeing all the good things. Now, okay, we presented it in a basic way. We're mamish in mid-sentence here. But I want to end on time, so we're going to take it from here next week, Bezos Hashem. And now, if there are any questions. Okay, so we'll stop here. And yes, for the coming.